Okay.
Well, we missed last week because of Mary Beth's...
How's she doing?
She's doing good. She's doing very well.
Good.
She had her first chemo last Wednesday, and on Tuesday, they did a bunch of scans from her neck to her pelvis. They also did a bone scan, looking for any trace of any metastasis anywhere, and they couldn't find any.
Oh, thank God. That's good.
So what they're... absolutely.
That's good.
So what they're doing now is they're giving them the chemo. It's a really strong chemo. It's called a Red Devil, and a lot of people
call it that. Great.
Yeah. Because it's a red color.
Oh.
It turns your urine green, red, and everything. You know. Mm. So they said, don't think you're passing blood or anything.
Right. That's scary.
But it's really hard. But she had that on Wednesday, and then it said within 48 to 72 hours. It would kick in and she would begin to feel the effects, you know. Well, Friday, she did.
Yeah.
And how'd she feel? Like, was she still
a lot of nausea, a lot of just just crunching down, you know. She didn't want to eat anything.
Yeah.
We have some vanilla caramel tea from Bigelow, and that seemed to sit well with her. So she had a lot of tea, and she ate some little bits of things. And I told her, I said, don't try to eat a meal. Just take little tiny bits of stuff frequently through the day, you know, because you got to keep your strength up.
And did the doctor say she should do chemo, or she made the decision based on all the different stuff they
They did what they call the Onco score. And if the Onco score is 25 or below, they say they don't recommend doing chemo. Hers is 40. And so the Onco score is a score that tells what the likelihood of recurrence is within 5 years. And so hers was 40. And so they say you definitely want to do chemo. And it was interesting because the day before they did chemo, they did all the scans, you know.
Yeah.
Bone scan, everything. Didn't find a single thing. So every discernible trace of cancer in a body has been removed.
That's good.
In the surgery, and they can't find it anywhere else. But what they're afraid of is that, you know, whenever you do surgery on cancer, some little cells can escape, right? And it, you can't see them. They just kind of run around. And what they're afraid of is that they will settle into areas where you particularly have a high turnover of cells, like in your stomach lining, because they replace every few hours, from what I understand, you know, because of the stomach acid, you know, everything else. They're afraid they'll get into something like that. And then trigger a growth and start another one there. And so the whole point of the chemo is to find those cancer cells and kill them.
And I think, if once you get cancer like that, it just shows some kind of door was open that you got it to begin with.
Yeah.
So you wonder,
Well, Carol now, she had the bone marrow transplant, and it's in remission. And I thought, that's it, bing, bing, bing. She says, no. Bone marrow, you live with it. It keeps coming. But, they said to her, bone marrow transplant, 2 years. But they said some go 5 years, some go 10. I said, it's in the hand of God. It's in God's hands.
For sure it is.
But she goes back every 6 weeks for the blood test, everything is fine.
Nobody even knows my friend's mother died in her 90s, and she had breast cancer when we were in college together, and she never got cancer again.
My mother had breast cancer and uterine cancer in 50, 55, and she lived to be 98. Yeah. It's in God.
If they get it out.
Yeah. Well, I was talking to Mary Guyant the other day, and she had it twice, 25 years apart.
Oh, wow.
And she's still
healthy.
And she's still walking around, you know. So you never know.
No.
Yeah, it's in God's hands. If God wants you to hang around for a while because he's got some job for you to do,
that's right.
You know, you're going to be here. If it's time for you to go home, it takes you home.
Exactly.
It's just the way it is. Yeah.
Yep.
Look at all these kids that have it. You know, St. Jude's.
I can't look at that without crying.
I know.
I mean, this tiny little, and their parents suffer.
It's tough. It's really tough.
Yeah.
But anyway, she's doing okay.
That's good.
And so she goes back again next week for another one. But she's doing them on Wednesday and Thursday. So we should be able to have class on Monday.
That's good.
I don't see her schedule as a disruption of that.
Yeah. Is she close to the doctor's or the hospital?
We're about
distance?
20 minutes away.
That's not too bad. No.
Yeah, it's about 15, 20 minutes. Oh. And so I take her up there, and we sit. And the whole thing takes about 4 hours. Mm-hmm. So we get there at 8, and then they connect her up to the port, mm-hmm. and they give her steroids and all this kind of stuff to help with the effects and all.
Yeah.
And then they give her two different kinds of chemo, and then they give her a saline flush. And then we go home.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's good. Well, she's getting a lot of prayers. So, I can just imagine how many prayers she's getting. You know, exactly.
Yeah, we've got people praying all over the place. Yeah. All you guys are praying, and the Knights of Columbus are praying. And
I'm sure all the priests that know you.
Michael's old parish is praying for her, you know.
It's the
and
prayers.
Then my son Daniel's wife's cousin is a seminarian down in Texas.
Wow.
So he's got the whole seminary praying for us. So.
That's powerful.
A lot of prayers going.
Yeah. I think you can feel them, too.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. So the Knights of Columbus are really, you know, praying and everything. Mm. So that's a really good deal.
That's good.
So we're putting her in the hands of God.
Right.
And looking to see how that goes.
Yeah.
So we're coming to the end of the fifth dwelling place.
Yeah.
If you recall, the fifth dwelling place is where it's like the meeting of the two parties to see if they're going to fall in love with each other. When we get into the sixth dwelling place, that's where they've now decided they are in love, and it's a spousal, it's a bit of betrothal between the parties.
Mm.
And so we'll get into that. So we're at 5491.
Mm.
Teresa says, the diligence on our part, and she's, don't forget, she says here in this fifth dwelling place, the devil still tries to draw you away, even though it's much, much harder. But he still has, can put a finger on you and say, hey, why don't you come play with me for a while, you know? And so you got to watch out for that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So the diligence on our part that comes to my mind as being the most effective is the following. First, we must always ask God in prayer to sustain us. And again, it's that idea of perseverance.
Mm-hmm.
You don't ever want to give up. You know? So you pray for that perseverance. Ask God in prayer to sustain us, and very often think that if he abandons us, we will soon end in the abyss, as is true. You can't ever, you know, God doesn't, is never going to willfully abandon you.
Mm-hmm.
He wants you in heaven with him.
Mm-hmm.
But if you turn your back on him, you know, he sometimes has no choice but to cut you loose.
Mm-hmm.
We must never trust in ourselves, since it would be foolish to do so. Then we should walk with special care and attention, mm-hmm. observing how we are proceeding in the practice of virtue. And again, she brings back the idea of that growth in virtue, and never stop doing that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you never stop with humility and self-knowledge, but you also never stop trying to grow in virtue. Whether we are getting better or worse in some areas, especially in love for one another, and we recall what you said before about how we know we love God by how much we love one another,
mm-hmm.
and in the performance of ordinary tasks. And I think that's important too, because our everyday life is mostly made up of ordinary tasks.
Yeah.
We get up, we go to work, mm-hmm. we sweep the house, you know, we change diapers, whatever those ordinary tasks are, we should keep doing those with diligence. Here, once again, self-knowledge and humility are at work. Don't think that a soul that comes so close to God is allowed to lose him so quickly that the devil has an easy task, because he doesn't. At this point, God is really, you know, in control. His Majesty would regret the loss of this soul so much that he gives it in many ways, 1,000 interior warnings so that the harm will not be hidden from it.
Wow.
So when he sees God, this devil coming after you, he's going to warn you somehow.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's cool.
How that is. Like, that's not a good idea.
Basically, that's it, you know? Like, the devil's going to put temptations in front of you. And he's going to warn you, so turn away from that temptation. Don't indulge the temptation, because that could lead to sin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so the devil's going to try to tempt you away from all this stuff, from prayer and everything, to get you to turn back.
Mm.
And he knows what your weaknesses are, mm. so his temptations are going to be geared toward whatever your particular weakness is.
Mm.
And so you have to be on alert. You got to know yourself enough to know that that is your weakness. And so when you see a temptation come in like that, you got to turn away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one thing that comes to my mind, suppose somebody has a temptation for gambling.
Mm.
Okay. All of a sudden you see all these ads on TV about this FanDuel and betting on TV.
That's
on
everywhere.
Suit.
Yeah.
You know. So if you have a weakness for the gambling, that's going to be a big temptation, especially when they say, just bet $5 and we'll give you $200. You know, they try to entice you to go into it. Then at the end of the commercial, they give you a little warning, if you have a gambling problem, you need to call this number, 800, whatever it is, you know. But somebody who's got the gambling problem is not going to call that number, probably, you know.
Yeah.
So that's one example of the kind of thing, you know. So he's going to put these things in front of you. These temptations in front of you and try to draw you away so that the more time you spend on that, the less time you spend on prayer. And he's going to try to draw you away. So when you see that kind of thing and you start to feel yourself tempted, bingo, you say, nope, got to do it. I'm not going to play this FanDuel thing.
And he does it over and over again. He gears it specifically to your way of life. I laugh because I'll come from Mass and run around, do a few things, get home, and I just want to sit and have a cup of coffee and turn on the TV, but I didn't say the morning liturgy. Now it's like, it's funny because you can feel the grace of God because I automatically do it.
Mm-hmm.
I can feel myself. I don't say I have to do it or I should do it.
I just do it. Yeah.
And I go, that's nice. I mean, that's helpful.
You know, I had visitors this weekend.
Yeah.
And it was really hard to do my rosary.
Yeah.
We just were going nonstop.
Yeah.
So I did it on my phone at one point, and I feel really like this isn't the best. And then I had to do that like two nights, and then the St. Bridget thing, I couldn't even do. And so I'm like, finally, yesterday, I did like St. Bridget three times in a row. I'm like, I'm making up. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It says to do that, you know?
It was hard. Yeah. Even in, when I went to bed, I go, maybe I can get it in my sleep. And I think I was in the middle of it, and I fell asleep.
Yeah, that happens.
I was like,
I could do it in my mind. I just couldn't do it all. And then it's like, you know, you feel kind of, you know, it's all day I think about, I can't get this in.
Yeah. Well, I ran into that, too. The stuff comes up every day. So I've gotten into the habit of doing it first thing in the morning.
Yeah.
You know, if
that's hard for me because I feel the pressing of you got to do this.
Yeah.
That's the way I'm being tempted.
So I get up at 5:00.
Yeah.
And I do all that stuff first because I know myself. You know, I'm going to get involved with stuff, and I'm not going to be able to do it. So I just get up early enough and get it done.
I know how
long it takes, and I sit down and just do it.
I should have done that. I get up and I'm like, oh no, I got to get downstairs to help with breakfast or, my mother gets up way earlier than me.
And I also put it on my internet, on my Kindle.
Oh. Uh-huh.
So that, like if we go on a cruise or something.
Yeah.
I've already got all the things
That's good.
You know, so I'll wake up in the morning early, I get my alarm set, and I just do it while I'm still in bed.
I do think the day goes better if you do it early.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it does.
Because then you feel like, okay, I got that.
Well, if you don't, it's hanging in the back of your head.
Yeah.
I still got to do it. I still got to do it.
I sometimes would forget to do
something. Once in a while, I wouldn't get in bed and then you look over your day and go, oh, no, I never did that.
Yeah.
You're so mad at yourself.
Yeah, you say 9:00 at night and you say, well, I still haven't done it yet. So, yeah, you do it first thing.
Yeah.
I find that very, very helpful.
Yeah, I have a hard time doing
so a lot of times I might start them at the house, one or two, but I'll finish them at church because I bring my Kindle with me.
Yeah.
And I just do them as part of the Mass preparation.
I have a hard time doing it in the car because I don't think I'm focusing on it.
I don't do that in the car. I pray the rosary in the car.
Well, that's what I mean. I have a hard time with that because, I mean, I can do it. It just doesn't feel like I'm doing it the way I should be. I don't know. That's how he gets us, though.
We slug through, right?
Right.
It's not easy. No. You slug it through. Yeah. Perseverance, persistence.
Yeah.
Just like he's talking about here.
Yeah.
So he gives us these interior warnings. So whatever your vice happens to be, you're going to get a lot of temptations in that. So you got to recognize that. It's just throwing it at you and just put it aside. And you don't try to do it yourself.
Because
you're not strong enough, right? So you call upon your guardian angel, upon Jesus, Blessed Mother, say, please help me, you know, and then start saying the Our Father or the Hail Mary or something like that, because you're giving yourself to them. And then you find that all of a sudden the temptation's gone. You know, it's past. It's no longer there. Mm. So that's good. So Teresa is ever mindful of the weakness of our fallen nature, and so we must be always on our guard against the subtle and sneaky ways the devil tries to get us to turn around and leave prayer. He never sleeps and knows us better than we know ourselves. He knows our weaknesses and plays to them. What are some of the ways we can implement Teresa's advice to stay diligent? I think we just were talking about
that.
Yeah. So just think of all the different kind of things that would tempt you, and then say, okay, those are the things that are my potential weakness. And so just recognize, you have the self-knowledge, recognize that they are, and then be on the lookout for any kind of thing, because they're going to come.
Yeah.
He's going to try to pull you away from this life of prayer. There's no way he's not. Can't. The one thing that drives the devil crazy is watching somebody pray. He hates it when they pray. He hates it when they use the name Jesus. Remember that movie Nefarious, where the demon would not use the word, the name Jesus, calls him the carpenter and all that kind of stuff, but refuses to use his name. So in 5, 4, 10 and 11, don't forget, whenever I've taken a couple of paragraphs together, I put a comma between them, so this is 10 and 11. Let this, and she says, so she says, let this in sum be the conclusion, that we strive always to advance. If we don't advance, let us walk with great fear. Without doubt, the devil wants to cause some lapse, for it is not possible that after having come so far, one will fail to grow. Love is never us. So if you got this far, you're going to keep going, because you're relying on God now, and God's pulling you. Okay? Love is never idle, and a failure to grow would be a very bad sign. A soul, one of the signs is that you're losing your love for God.
I was going to say, what is the things that would show you that you're lapsing?
One thing is you lose your love for prayer. You lose your love for God. Not that you say, oh, I don't love God anymore, but you just don't give him as much attention as before. And when you really love somebody, they're always on your mind. When you were in love, you know, when you were courting, your spouse today was always on your mind, you know? And if you have decided to take Jesus as your spouse, he should be always on your mind too. And when you find that you're thinking about everything else but him, that's one of the big signs. A soul that has reached the boundaries that were mentioned must not go to sleep, that you may see what he does with those he now considers to be his betrothed ones, we shall begin to speak of in the sixth dwelling place. That's where she'll start talking about it, all the different ways that he deals with you. And you will see how little it all is that we can do to serve and suffer and accomplish so as to dispose ourselves for such great favors. So once again, she's bringing up the idea that we do what we can to dispose ourselves for God to work in us. So we try to make ourselves available to him, so to speak. Whatever he wants to do with us, we let him do. And we invite him. We don't just let him do it. We invite him to come into our lives and then use us in any way he wants. In section 11, Teresa says, through his favors, we can understand something of what he will give us in heaven without the intervals, the trials, and dangers that there are in this tempestuous sea. So she's been saying he's beginning to give us a little hint of what heaven is like. It's like you got this curtain, and you pull the curtain back a little bit, and you get a peek, you know. But you don't see the whole thing, but you get a little peek of what it's like. You know, he's giving you this kind of stuff.
You know what I think? It's like after you receive communion. I said, this is heaven. We are in God. He's in us.
Yeah.
And that great feeling You know, that, that's heaven. I mean, that's mind-boggling to have that constantly.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
Yeah. One of the things that struck me going through the next section on the sixth dwelling place was that idea she brought up before about you can never underestimate the capacity of the soul. Mm-hmm. When we see some of the stuff that starts to come up in six, you're going to see the capacity of the soul. Mm-hmm. You know, it's going to be really amazing. Mm-hmm. So why does Teresa say love is never idle and failure to grow would be a very bad sign? Why can't love ever be idle?
Well, you just think about your family, all the stuff you do out of love for them, and it's every day you're like...
Yeah.
Laundry, you know, making meals, or calling out concern for someone, or checking up, or...
And when you love, you can't stop loving to a regardless of what happens. I mean, in marriage, it's a commitment for life. It's not always perfect. But you don't stop loving your husband.
Even if you get mad,
you still love them.
Sure.
Love doesn't die.
It also grows, and you notice in your own relationships with your parents, your siblings, your spouse, or anything, your relationship of love with all of them changes over time. Mm-hmm. It's always changing. It never stands still. You know, you never march in place.
Right.
It's always growing. It's always changing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you love your little kid. But then as you watch the child grow into an adult, your love for them changes dramatically, but you still love them.
Yeah. Mm.
You watch your parents. You see them growing old. Mm-hmm. You still love them, you know?
Yeah.
Just like they did when they were 25 and playing ball with you in the yard and everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it's a different kind of thing. It's more of a caring love than, whereas before... they were caring for you.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. It's kind of reversing roles, kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so all those things grow. Those love is always changing. It's always growing. It's always morphing into something it wasn't before.
Yeah.
And
it grows deeper.
Yeah, grows deeper. Yeah.
With all love for God, grows
deeper.
Mm.
So you get more of a connection and everything, you know. So that's. And so if you see that's not happening in you, then that's a bad sign.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we not fall into that trap? How do we make sure that we don't let love die on the vine, so to speak?
Keep up your prayer life. You know, don't
that's one thing, yeah. But always affirming it, I think, is a big thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Never let a day go by without telling your child or your parents or your spouse that you love them.
Right.
Every day, and at least once a day.
Love is proof.
Yeah.
But also good deeds. It's what you do for the person that you love.
Yeah.
You don't measure it if you love
them. Yeah. Because I've heard a lot of people say, when was the last time you told your wife you love her? Oh, she knows I love her. I don't say it very often.
It was the whole Raymond show on that. And Raymond decided to be the big hero and say to Dad, do you love me? And the guy goes, you know, the way he'd say, you crazy? And it was a whole big discussion, and they all did it for like a day. They were hugging each other and loving each other, and then something happened, and the old guy says, let's get back to the other way. It was much more fun. The show, I see it 20 times.
Hey, that's a funny show. I used to love that show.
It's good.
That's really funny. So we got to the end of five.
Wow.
So we may hit a milestone here. Okay. That's the good thing. Now, the majority of the book is 6 and 7. We have spent 20 weeks on less than the majority of the book.
How did we do that?
Going through this.
It's a bunch of women, that's why.
So... But I think it's going to go a little bit faster because in these chapters, things are kind of come up. She'll take 3 or 4 paragraphs and I'll talk about one thing. So you kind of combine them when you talk about them, you know. So I don't think it's going to be the same pace. But it's going to be very interesting because it's going to be talking about a lot of different things.
We did this as the Carmelites. Here's our, we started in December, November, December, January, February, March, April, May, June, July, August, September.
See, it took a long time, too.
That was 10 years, 20 years ago that we did it. Look at that. So they took a couple of chapters a month, one chapter.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It took a while.
It's not an easy book, too.
No.
No, it's not. Well,
no, you can't just rush through it because it's really deep.
Well, Father Kavanaugh also makes a point. I think I have a note here in the introductory part of 6 that this 6th chapter comprised about 15 years of Teresa's life.
Wow.
So it's kind of condensed here, but this covered 15 years of her life.
Mm.
Yeah. And when she wrote the book of her life, she was just beginning to go through this. She had not gone into the seventh dwelling place yet. So she didn't know why God was doing all these things. And so when she wrote the Terry Castle, she understood it better. She knew what was going on, understood what was happening and all. So then she could explain it a lot better now than she could in the book of her life. So that's it. That's why, you know, we've got the advantage of this.
Mm.
We have so many advantages when you think about it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
All these writings of the saints, they didn't have all this stuff, and we do. You know, it just gives us so much to work with. It's just really amazing.
Was this the last book she wrote, you know?
I think so, yeah. Because she died shortly after she finished this book.
That was her mission, get this one out.
Yeah.
And all she did, all those monasteries, traveling all the time, mind-boggling her life.
Yeah.
I have an ulcer.
So in 6 and 7, I'm just calling them discussion topics, not questions, because I don't think any of us are quite there yet. Some of us might be. Just calling them
discussion. You know, so it's going to talk about the dark night of the soul. I had never heard of that until Mother Teresa died, and then they did all that.
Yeah.
And I was so discouraged when I heard it. But now I understand it.
Yeah.
But at the time, I thought, what? Mother Teresa, this most holy person that, you know, we aspire to be like, didn't talk to Jesus for how long?
Yeah.
And I was just like, what does that mean? What does that mean?
Yeah.
Did she do something wrong? Was she on the wrong path and she never knew it for all those years? I mean, I didn't understand it at all.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I thought, if they don't come out and tell you what that means, that could almost discourage people. Like, what is the point?
Yeah. Well, that's the advantage.
That's how I kind of felt at that point.
Right.
I was like,
well,
what is the point of it then if she can't?
Right.
Yeah, well, a lot of people that start to read John of the Cross, because he's got a whole book in the Dark Night of the Soul.
Yeah, it's at the library there. Yeah.
And, so we did a study on John of the Cross, and he's got several things. If you ever decide to look at John of the Cross, either if you want to do it here or I would start with the spiritual canticle first.
Yeah. Spiritual canticle.
Yeah.
Okay, because he's got the Dark Night of the Soul, he's got the Ascent of Mount Carmel, a bunch of things. The reason I would suggest that is because when you look at the spiritual canticle, it's kind of like almost like an index to everything else.
Yeah.
He covers the whole spectrum. He talks about all this stuff and shows how it all kind of fits together.
Yeah.
It's a poem, and I hate poetry. I never read poetry.
I
can't stand poetry.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It was written in Spanish. So when you translate it to English, it doesn't sound like poetry. So it sounds more like a regular novel.
And it's so deep.
So I can tolerate it. It was very deep.
Very deep.
But he kind of walks you through this whole process. And so when you look at it in a spiritual canticle and you can see that whole picture, then when you go back and look at the Ascent of Mount Carmel and the Dark Night, you kind of see how that fits into the whole picture and doesn't scare you enough, you know? But the idea of the Dark Night is just that God wants you to love him for himself alone and not because of anything he's giving you or any consolations or anything else.
Yeah.
And so you just love him because he's God.
Yeah. But she went so long, and she just wanted to see him again.
Yeah.
And I was like, couldn't you have a little mercy and show up?
But it's for her benefit.
It's for her benefit.
You have to go through that stage.
And that's the thing we have to always remember.
Yeah.
Even if you're going through the dark night, remember, God is never going to do anything to you that is bad for your spiritual growth.
Mm-hmm.
Everything he does for you is for your spiritual benefit.
Well, she didn't give up, so...
She didn't give up. You know, she had made all of her nuns start their day with an hour of adoration.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they began their day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just like spending an hour in prayer, you
like
know.
Like Bishop Shane. He did that every day. Yeah.
So that's the thing to remember, that regardless of... Now, people sometimes go through a night that might last a very short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Others might take years,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so it's... But what he wants you to do is love him for himself and not because of any consolations he's given you. And that's the really important thing here. So Father Cavanaugh points out that 12 years previously, she wrote about some of these things. We talked about that.
Mm-hmm.
But here in these last two dwelling places, she has a much better understanding of what God was doing with her.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was able to organize it in a much better way. So now we get the benefit of that.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the beauties of these writings of the saints. Mm-hmm. You know, they go through the experience, but then we get the benefit of it.
Mm-hmm.
These dwelling places are autobiographical as well as doctrinal, and so what she describes is what happens interiorly to her. These six dwelling places refer to a large segment of her life covering about 15 years. It was during these years that she received her mission as foundress. After founding St. Joseph's in Avila, traveled to establish other foundations. It was also during this time that she recruited St. John of the Cross to found the Discalced Carmelites among the friars. That was a real huge thing for her to find him,
mm-hmm.
because he was then able to help her understand a lot of what was going on in her, because he was going through the same thing himself.
Mm-hmm.
We can see that even though she wanted to be alone with her spouse, she is also very busy doing what Jesus asked of her. She asked Jesus about this, and he told her, "You do my work, I give you, and I will take care of your work." So she was just focused on that. The first topic Teresa addresses in the first chapter of the Six Dwelling Places, which John of the Cross would later refer to as the dark night of the soul. She doesn't call it that because at that time she didn't know what it was. She had never had its experience before. She didn't have a name for it. So all she could do was describe the things that were happening to her.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of a dark night experience. So what she describes happening to her interiorly was happening as she experienced this dark night, which can and will be different or unique for each one of us. Some of us won't experience it at all. Some of us might be so involved in things that, you know, God's got you working on other things, but he doesn't want you to deal with this right now because other things are more important. As long as he sees you're progressing spiritually, that might be the case. He might just not force you to go through a dark night. All that depends on how much he sees you loving.
Mm-hmm.
It brings home the truth that when you're in this dark night, God is closer to you than at any other time.
Mm-hmm.
But Teresa, in this interior darkness, with a feeling of powerlessness, she at the same time experiences feelings of God's absence and being abandoned by God. As she has explained so well elsewhere, these are her experiences. Others in these same dwelling places may have an entirely different set of experiences as God draws them into spiritual intimacy with himself in a way that is unique to that soul. So then we get into chapter 1. I began each chapter, after chapter 1, I began each chapter on a new page so that it'd be easier to print them out for you guys and send them out. I didn't want a chapter beginning in the middle of a page, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So from 6 and 7, that's what we're going to do.
Okay.
So in chapter 1, Teresa talks about the love the soul has for the spouse after experiencing the meeting which was the fifth dwelling place. So now she says, I love you very much, and I want to be your spouse. She's kind of making that commitment at this point. She wants to repeat the meeting because that was such a great thing for her. She really enjoyed that. Mm-hmm. But God says, no, we got better things ahead. You know, we're not going to keep going backwards. We're going to keep going forward. But Jesus has more in mind for her. The soul wills to be alone with his spouse and never be separated. If you look at the prayer Anima Christi that St. Ignatius Loyola wrote, it says, never let me be separated from you. You know? And so that's the idea that she has here. She wants to be alone with the spouse, and she wants to never be separated from the spouse. At the same time, he's got her running all over, founding these new monasteries and everything else, and doing all kind of work, you know. She wants to rid the soul of every obstacle to this solitude. Nothing of this experience is in the senses or the imagination. It is all in the soul, and the two faculties of the soul are intellect and will. The soul longs for this union, but the spouse seems to withdraw, asking the soul for even more. The soul wants no other spouse, wants nothing else to take her attention. Betrothal, he calls her to in this sixth dwelling place, is the greatest blessing, and it comes at a cost. Because he wants all of you. He doesn't want just part of you, he wants all of you. Teresa was in the convent when she experienced this dark night. Mother Teresa was also a sister, but even though she experienced the dark night for a long time, she worked out in the world among the poor in the streets of Calcutta. Each dealt with this night in her own way. What kinds of nights might we who live in the world experience, and how can we deal with them?
Well, I think a lot of people might be having them now with all the negative stuff going on in the world.
Yeah.
Even though it might not be a personal thing that's hitting you.
Mm.
You just see the whole world as it is right now.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think a lot of people are experiencing something like this because when you look at the suicide rate, it's so high right now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily feel they're going through a spiritual dark night.
Yeah.
Because their gods are really close to you, you know.
Mm.
But they're going through a different kind of dark night where they're just giving up on life.
That's what I mean by seeing what's going on.
You just can't. More depression in the world.
Depression and everything else.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopelessness. Yeah. Without God, there's hopelessness.
Several weeks ago, Father Brian's homily at the 10:45 Mass, he spoke about how everyone will go through a period of suffering in their life. So, based on now this today, wouldn't that be the same as the dark night?
It could be. It could very well be. One of the characteristics of the dark night is that you feel God is withdrawing from you, like he's not there anymore. You had this real close relationship, you know, and you felt God was always there. You could talk to him, and you felt like he was your buddy, you know. He's right there. And all of a sudden, he feels like he's gone. He's not there anymore. And what he wants you to realize is that he's never gone. He's always there. He's closer to you than at any other time in your life. But he's not going to give you the consolations of that closeness. Because he wants you to love him because he's God. Because we owe him that. Because he's God. And that's the thing that you go through. And it'll last a little while. For some of these saints, it lasted years. But they never gave up. Because they knew that God loved them. They knew that they had him within them all the time. And they just never lost that conviction, that certitude that he was there. And because of that, they were able to get through the dark night. Because they knew, I can't. It's like having your champion. Like, if you know, when you were the queen of England, you had a knight that was your champion, so he was always there by your side. The President of the United States has a Secret Service. It'd be like all of a sudden, if you were the president and you couldn't see your Secret Service anymore. You knew they were there, but you just couldn't see them. And it's like that. You know God is there, and you know He's close to you, and you know He loves you, but you just can't feel Him. You can't see Him. It seems to you like He's not there, almost like He's abandoned you. And that'll last for some time. And like she says, not everybody's going to experience that when they get to this point. A lot of it depends on what He sees in your soul and how much closer He wants to draw you. Because He's always drawing you to Himself. Even during the dark night, little by little, He's drawing you closer and closer and closer to you. And that's the thing you have to never lose sight of and never forget. That no matter what's happening, He's there. He loves you infinitely. And He wants you to spend eternity with Him. He wants you to participate in the life of the Trinity. He wants all those marvelous things for you. And so you never lose sight of that. You know that's in your future. So you just slug it through. It's like walking through a cave in the dark. Mm-hmm. You know, He's your light, but you don't see the light. But you know He's there, taking care of you, making sure you don't stumble over a rock or fall into a hole or something like that. He's always there.
When everybody suffers, and you try to think of someone who hasn't suffered.
Yeah.
And I think they're not showing it, or they're hiding it. And that's why some people get it caught up in that Instagram and TikTok, seeing those people's lives, because they're not showing.
Some people never suffer because they don't have any relationship with God.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, think about that.
That's true, too.
You know, Jesus said, take up your cross every day and follow me. That means we're going to have a cross. Mm. We're going to have some of it every day. Mm-hmm. Now, some people go through life, and all they focus on is material things.
I think they suffer still, though, because I think God's trying to get their attention.
But they're not using that suffering as redemption.
If they even give God a second thought.
Yeah.
Think of all the atheists in the world who think God doesn't even exist. Mm-hmm. All they care about is material gain.
Yeah, it's a shame. I think also when you're going through that dark night or something like that, it could be a sickness, suffering. I think husband gets laid off or something. Children suffer. And I forgot what I was going to say. You have to go deeper in faith. Because I always, anytime something used to happen, everyone gets things. My husband was laid off as an engineer. They did away with this department, this blah, 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 blah. He was only out of work 2 weeks with all the layoffs. But it was every time I found out I was pregnant. It was that week he would get laid off. And I said, Jesus, I trust in you. But I say to my kids, you just, with each thing, you have to go deeper in faith. You just dig deeper. You think you have faith. But then when something else comes, I said, you just go deeper. And you say, I trust you more.
Mm. Well, that's a really good point, too, because as you're going through this dark night, regardless of how it displays itself to you, you have to rely on God. Like I say, you got to go deeper in faith. You got to say, whatever I'm dealing with, I can't deal with it alone. That's child sickness.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. Are you the specialist in that field?
Yeah.
Probably not.
Yeah.
So you got to rely on somebody else. Well, you got to rely on God. When you're going through this kind of a dark night, He's your physician. And you got to say, okay, I trust you. You're going to do, it's a bitter medicine that you give me right now, but it's something I need right now for my spiritual welfare, my spiritual growth. So you think of it as a kind of a medicine.
Mm.
And you say, okay, I'm going to come out of the other side of this thing with greater spiritual health than I had before.
And looking back, the older you are, the more you can look back. I think each suffering is a little harder. It's harder. I know. The sufferings I had years ago are not what I have now, like worrying about my Carol. I don't worry, I shouldn't say that, with the bone marrow. Things like that.
Yeah.
They're deep. They're harder sufferings, but then it makes you go deeper.
Yeah.
You know? Because years ago, the stuff was lighter suffering than it is. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. It gets. I think the suffering gets a little harder.
I think because you're coming closer to God. I think when you're younger, you're doing the suffering.
Yeah.
Or you have something happen, and you're like, well, it's going to, I don't know, maybe it's youth. You're like, oh, it'll turn out all right.
Yeah.
Or you don't even
differently when we're younger, too.
Yeah, you don't even give it that much
thought
or something.
Well, it's different kinds of suffering, too. Like, you know, when you're a kid, you fall, you break a leg. Okay, so you walk around with a cast for a while, you know, and it hurts, you cry, and all that kind of stuff, you know. But now you have a different kind of suffering altogether.
Right.
You know? Watching Mike go through his hospice was hard.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, but talking to him about it was a great blessing, I think, for both of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it gave him a chance to articulate it, and it gave me a chance to see how he was dealing with it spiritually.
Yeah.
And that gave me hope and strength to do that with him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just...
Yeah.
When the older you get, it's a different kind of suffering, I think.
Yeah.
And I think that's what Teresa was going through here. Mm-hmm. So when you look at the things that she was going through, her nights were hard for her because she was, first of all, she was confined in a convent, right? So you're kind of cloistered.
Mm-hmm.
And other nuns were ragging on her and gossiping about her.
Mm-hmm.
They would say, oh, she thinks she's so holy, you know, she's such a saint.
Wasn't she the head one? So they're all below her.
Yeah. So who does she think she is, you know? Yeah. Blah, 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 blah. So she was dealing with all this as the mother priors. And so they're supposed to come to her for advice and counsel when they need it. And they're sitting there ragging on her. So you can imagine how she felt, you know? So you can see her, almost like hear her going through her mind, who am I to tell them what to do when they think I'm a terrible person, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm just kind of bragging on myself or whatever.
Yeah.
Because she's trying to help them grow spiritually by showing them what she's going through.
And she made it stricter.
Yeah.
She reformed the order, and she got away with, she said, no more of this visiting, the whole family coming in, and all the nuns making dinner for their family, and blah. She really made it strict.
Yeah.
They didn't want that at all.
Yeah.
She reformed it.
So she was going through that kind of a thing where her whole surroundings were like attacking her, you know. Mm-hmm. And so it was hard for her to do that. And Teresa says that if the soul knew beforehand what kinds of trials and crosses it would have to endure, the natural weakness would make it difficult to have the determination to pass through the trials no matter what, unless it had arrived at the seventh dwelling place. For once there, the soul fears nothing and is determined to overcome every obstacle. This is the first hint that she gives us that when you get to the sixth dwelling place, it's really like an open door between the sixth and the seventh, and you keep going back and forth. God will draw you into the seventh for a short time, but then you go back to the sixth, and he'll draw you back into the seventh again, and then you go back to the sixth. And she says that in the seventh dwelling place, nobody can be there, and that's in the depth of your own soul. Nobody can be there except you and God. Not even the Blessed Mother could enter there.
Wow.
So he treats you as such a unique creature in all of creation that he will spend time with you uniquely, just you and him together in that seventh dwelling place. And when you're there, every time he brings you there, he's teaching you more about himself and more about heaven. And so this is the first indication that she gives us that you can only go through what you're going to go through here and everything else if you've also experienced the seventh. So he'll periodically bring you there and then let you go back.
So that means, maybe I'm right, or maybe I'm wrong.
You're never wrong.
Yes, my husband. say someone's in the seventh, and only God can go into that with you in the soul. But that person still prays to the Blessed Mother, and it's just that she's there, but she can't get in to that part.
Yeah.
She doesn't interfere with that meeting with you and God.
The point God is making here is that he treats you like such a unique creature, which you are.
It's you and him alone.
That he's going to deal with you one-on-one.
I see.
Okay. The Blessed Mother doesn't have to be there. She's already brought you to him. Her job is to bring you to her son.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay? When you get to this point, she's done her job.
Mm-hmm.
She's brought you to her son.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? She's going to go off and get somebody else now and work on them. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And those are all the people you pray for. You ask her, please, you know, save my child that's left the church, or save my brother who's an atheist, or, mm-hmm. you know,
mm-hmm.
go out and get these people and save them and bring them back. Because she wants to help her son build the biggest kingdom of God possible.
Mm-hmm.
The kingdom of God is not a place.
Mm-hmm.
It's us. You know, if you're a king and all you have is a desert in front of you, you're not a king of very much. But if that desert is full of people, you now have a kingdom. And that's what God is looking for. He wants the biggest kingdom he can possibly have. And his kingdom is made up of the people that he created, that he loves infinitely, and he wants them to love him in return. The sad thing is that we cannot love him infinitely because we're not infinite. So we have to love him to whatever extent we can, using whatever capacity for love he gives us. And that's part of the advantages of all this prayer life, is that our capacity for love is always increasing. So the more we love God, the greater our capacity for love is, and therefore the more, much more we can love God. So it's like a never-ending process. The more we love God, the more love he gives us, the more love we have, the more we can love him. And the more we can love others.
When you get to this place, even the sixth and the seventh, like, your love, is it constant? I mean, some days you might love God more or give him less attention another day. Or
your love is always growing.
Okay. Right, that answers, yeah.
Yeah, it's always growing.
But you can go back a little. Or at this stage, do you just keep going?
You keep going, but you love him in different ways.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Because what he's going to start doing now is start teaching you himself. He's going to teach you what he is. He's also going to teach you what heaven is like.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to draw you into experiences. You remember the book of Revelation when John was brought up brought up in spirit into heaven?
Yeah.
Okay, it's that kind of a thing. And so he's going to draw you in, give you experiences. Sometimes you can't even explain them. And one of the first ones we'll look at here, the second one, is one where you have an experience where you see stuff, but you can't remember anything you saw.
You see what?
You see stuff.
Oh.
But you can't remember anything you see.
Mm-hmm.
He's like giving you a glimpse of heaven, and you see all this wonderful stuff, and they say, "What would you see?" I don't know. I don't remember anything.
What do you think about the near-death experiences some people have?
Oh, yes.
Do you think they're seeing God?
I don't know. It's hard to say.
You know.
I don't think anybody comes back and guess God wants them to come back. Mm-hmm. And usually it's because of something he wants them to do when they come back.
Mm-hmm.
Like we've had a couple of cases of priests who have had that kind of experience.
Mm-hmm.
Like one priest was going to go to hell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he died and God brought him to him. And he said, by rights, by all injustice, you should go to hell.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a mission for you anyway. And he sent him back.
Mm-hmm.
And a huge change in that priest's life, you know, as you could well imagine. And he talks about he talked about the experience of meeting Christ and then what mission God gave him when he came back. So sometimes those things can happen.
Mm.
Does that happen to everybody? Probably not.
When Saint Therese was dying, she sat up and looked up, and they said she had the most beautiful smile on her face. I mean, they thought she was seeing something.
Oh, yeah, she probably was.
Wow.
The Blessed Mother said that if you have the right relationship with God and kind of prayer like we talked about here, said that the moment you die, you won't even notice it hardly. It's like moving from one room to the next. Because you're already in this relationship with God.
Mm-hmm.
And it's So people think of dying as this retching, yeah. tearing apart.
Well, it's like your soul coming out.
Ripping
yeah.
your soul out of your body
or
kind
you're
of thing.
Flying someplace.
You know, or you're going through some kind of terrible agony where you're yeah. ripping yourself apart. It's yeah. not like that.
Yeah. Well, you know the books they wrote? I remember years ago I read Dr. Moody. I think he was a doctor, and he had a near-death experience. No, and he died. And they mentioned the dark tunnel. And a lot of books do say that.
Yeah.
Who knows? Then they saw the light, you know, but
yeah.
You don't know. Well, yeah. that's what they experienced. Yeah.
I just think of Padre Pio. He's, you know, if you were one of his spiritual children, mm-hmm. he said he's going to stand at the door of heaven and not go in himself until all of his spiritual children go in. Mm. Think of the beautiful concept that is.
Oh, goodness. Yeah.
It's like a father, you know, you want your children to go first.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing. Beautiful. Absolutely amazing. Well, it is 10:31. We will stop here for the day. So we are now getting into the sixth dwelling place.
It's in the book. Woo, look at that. Woo. Yeah.
So,
wow. It's a lot of work you did. Wow.
Yeah. So we'll stop at the top of page 3 when we come back. And we should be here next week, I think, because we're not going to have the chemo till Wednesday.
Oh, Wednesday. So you won't be Wednesday. You won't be here next Wednesday.
Wednesday, Thursday, I won't be here.
Okay, because I do Monday week. And Wednesday at church, and the others do Tuesday, Thursday.
Yeah, Wednesday and Thursday, I won't be here next week.
Okay, Wednesday.
But
okay.
Yeah, but Monday we should be able to have class.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to miss 2 in October for our trip to Europe.
Yeah. Oh, when are you going?
I forgot what it was, 18th or 16th. It's a Monday.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, if you get the internet on your trip, you can download it.
Wherever you are, what pilgrimage.
Wherever you are.
I won't even be thinking straight. I'll be like, time change, you know.
All depends if you get the drinks package to go with it. Okay. Well, we'll see you guys next week.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
Wish me luck. You know, the hearing aid I put
week.
In.
Yeah.
You know,
and thanks again for all your prayers, Mary Beth.
That you pulled
really
on the hearing aid to pull it out. It disappeared.
Oh, man, I hope it didn't go in your ear.
That's what I was afraid of, but it couldn't have. See, this one is here.